The next case is 95-1774 LJ Minor Corporation versus Carol Breitenbach. Let me wait till I introduce you, please. So the counsel is ready. Okay. Okay, now you may begin.
Court, please. This is your end of tax case. I consider it to be very short. In its resolution, I think a little bit of background itself. Under the home rule doctrine, I and municipalities have always had the power of the municipal one. Not many were around after the Second World War. The need for increasing municipal revenues caused the number of municipalities for levying taxes. These taxes started to proliferate by about 1956. 27 of the major municipalities had taxes at this time. There was no uniformity among the municipalities and their taxes. No uniform rate, some had graduated taxes. The exemptions and deductions were different. There were portions of that. Businesses began to be concerned because a lot of companies operated in multiple municipalities. They had to comply with a apportionment formula, and when they were all or a lot of them were different, it was burdensome. Burdensome for the taxpayers, burdensome for the tax authorities. The consequence of groundswell arose for some type of restrictive legislation that would tell municipalities what they had to do in certain respects on their income tax. The bill was passed effective May of 1957, and this bill has a title which is very instructive here as to the purpose of the legislation. To provide for uniformity in the levy by municipal corporations of taxes on income. That was the principle, the purpose of the bill, to provide for uniformity. And so it did. The four principal restrictions laid down was uniform rate, meaning no graduates, no tax in excess of 1% unless voted upon by the electorate. No taxing of the income of service or charity organizations, and most important of all, it provided for a uniform apportionment formula to identify a share of net profits for any company that was operating in multiple or higher municipalities. This apportionment formula is necessary to avoid overlapping duplication. For example, you had a company operating in 50 municipalities, and they all had a 1% tax, and they all levied on full net profits. That's 50% net profits. They're operating in 100. You can see easily how that would be not only burdensome, but confiscatory. Therefore, it's necessary to have a proportionate form.
In principle, that part of your argument seems to be sort of an equitable argument. How is it different than an individual being taxed by two different municipalities? Is it that you can only, you live one place and work another, maybe there's a limit to how much overlapping taxation? Is that your answer?
Unfortunately, the Ohio Municipal Income Tax has never provided for a credit that is required for municipalities to give credits. Therefore, an individual working in one place and living in another can be subject to two taxes, except every municipality I know does give a credit to me, but there is no restricted. Now, distinguish that from this situation. We have statutory requirement here. We have statutory requirement. At any rate, this enactment called the Uniform Municipal Income Tax established a typical three-factor formula for dividing up the tax by property, payroll, sales within a municipality compared with property, sales, payroll, sales. Everywhere, that fraction basically is applied to net profits within In this instance, however, uniformity, the key to this case, and certainly the hallmark of the statute, has been seriously violated because L.J. Myron has been subjected essentially to the tax on the same sales by both Cleveland and by Gretzky.
On that point, Mr. Day, and that's the only one that bothered me in the case, do you read the Board of Review's opinion, the trial court, and the Court of Appeals opinion as saying that Brecksville had no right to tax?
The lower tribunals referred to document.
But that's really the bottom line of this whole thing. That's really the bottom line of this whole thing.
Well, it's the whole case, yes. When L.J. Myron discovered was being subjected to both the sales, the same sale by Brecksville and Cleveland, they went to the tax authorities and both tried to resolve it administratively. Neither Brecksville nor Cleveland back away. Miner says we only have to buy one ticket to the dance.
And it seems like in Brecksville's amicus brief that they reluctantly, I mean, you must have had to drag them all the way to the courthouse, reluctantly agreed with your position saying they had the right to tax and Cleveland doesn't.
Yes. Brecksville has a better claim. Brecksville is correct in our judgment. Now, this statute clearly states that the sales, in order to be attributable to Cleveland, must be shipped from a place within Cleveland to customers. Well, that's not where the sales were shipped from. We have a warehouse in Brecksville. It's been there since 1983. And when these goods are ordered by customers, they're shipped from the Brecksville warehouse. At that point, possession is transferred to the buyer, right of control, risk of loss, transferred to the buyer. That's where they occur under the statute.
However, the goods that are involved here, you pay taxes to both entities.
That's the effect.
You did, though. You filed returns with both Brecksville and Cleveland and paid the tax. Was that under mistake, or did you file under protest?
No, protests were filed and are still pending, I should say.
Protests simultaneously with the payment of the tax?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think they were.
It sounded to me like when I went through it that somebody just made an error and paid everybody, and then when you discovered that they were paying too much tax because it was double taxation?
For several years, that was the case. For several years.
Could it be that, well, let me ask it differently. Tell me why paragraph 2 doesn't apply to Cleveland and paragraph 3 applied to Brecksville, with the result that both are permitted to tax. Paragraph 2 of 718.02, which, as you know, the emphasis there is on the solicitation and promotion of sales, which apparently occurred in Cleveland. Isn't that right? Isn't that correct? And then the goods were shipped from a warehouse in Brecksville, where there were few employees and not much other activity other than getting the goods out of the warehouse and to the ultimate consumer. Tell me why 2 does not apply to Cleveland.
It does apply, Ron. The sales factor has three parts. Sales are evaluated by each of those three parts for purposes of attribution. The first part says goods originate in the city and have a final delivery point in the city, then the city may include those taxes. The second one says if goods are shipped from a point outside the city to the buyer within the city and they result from solicitation of the salesman within the city, then they're Cleveland sales. However, the third part, which is applicable here, applies to goods that are shipped to customers for purposes outside municipalities where no solicitation occurs. That's what we have here. All these sales, which is a predominant portion, come from Brecksville Warehouse and ship two purchases from that point. I would like to reserve at least 2 minutes for rebuttal. I don't know whether I know you that or not. It's plain to see that this statute was not applied correctly in our judgment. There was no reason to resort to interpretation. And we've got plain words of a statute, and when a tribunal is confronted with a situation like that, all you have to do is apply it. In order to resolve this ambiguity, the first being that the Board of Tax Review and the Board of Courts had to create an ambiguity to resolve. There's no resort no necessity to resort to statutory interpretation. They should apply the statute. Failure to do so was an error, and I think it's clear that the LG Minor is entitled to refund the taxes for 5 years. Otherwise, it's going to have to pay twice. I will reserve the rest of my time, please, for
the vote. Thank you, Mr. Day. Ms. Rosman.
May it please the court, my name is Deborah Rossman, attorney for Carol Breitbach in the city of Cleveland in this case. Your honors, first of all, I'd like to correct a misstatement of facts in the taxpayer's presentation. Testimony at the hearing was that the taxpayer went through an appeal in Brecksville. They applied for a refund of tax, it was denied, and they dropped the appeal. On page 52 of the transcript, the taxpayer's representative, Don Lewis, on the witness stand stated that beginning in 1988, taxpayers stopped paying tax in Brecksville, and as far as he knows, as of the date of the hearing, they had not paid tax since, and no action had been taken. Your honors, the facts are very important in this case. This case involved a factory, 200 people located in the city of Cleveland. Everything was made in Cleveland. All activities that we understand as sales took place in Cleveland. By that I mean orders were taken in Cleveland, negotiations were done either by phone from Cleveland or in writing sent to Cleveland. No order was valid until it was accepted in Cleveland, and payment was made in Cleveland. The only thing that happened in Brecksville was an employee would get a phone call from Cleveland saying, we've made a sale. You know, go out and put the package on the truck.
Let me ask how you interpret the statute. If we would find that Cleveland was the proper taxing entity, would you agree, Mr. Day's construction of the statute, that he gets all the money back from Brecksville?
Your Honor, We believe there is only one place a sale can occur, and under the decision of the Court of Appeals and under the City of Cleveland's theory of the case, that sale took place in Cleveland.
Would the answer to my question be yes?
Yes. I disagree. If you look at 718.02...
You disagree with Mr. Day, or you agree with
Mr. Day? I disagree with Mr. Day.
Oh, so you think that taxation can be on both ends, by both entities?
No, I'm sorry if I misspoke. There can only be one place the sale occurs.
All right, so if we hold for you and say you had the right to tax, then when you are interpreting the statute, you'll interpret and say he's entitled to a refund from Brecksville.
Yes, if that case were before the court, but the taxpayer himself chose not to pursue it. And I'd like to mention, it's important to note, and the taxpayer didn't tell you this, but the taxpayer's own state tax specialist in Exhibit D at the hearing admitted that these were taxable to Cleveland. And when heard of the facts, we see from Exhibit E, which was discussed on page 48 of the transcript, that Rita, representative of Brecksville, the Regional Income Tax Agency, upon hearing the facts, told the taxpayer's employee, Donald Lewis, that these were not taxable in Brecksville. A sale does not occur when someone picks up a package and puts it on a truck. That is not a sale. If we look at 718, every one of the three clauses begin all sales, tangible, personal property.
Are the routes that shipped from in the statute? Which is shipped from? Do they occur in the statute?
Yes, they occur in the statute in two places.
Well, what does that mean to you?
The view of Cleveland, the view of the report of review.
Wasn't shipped from Cleveland, was it?
Is that it was shipped from Cleveland and that Brecksville was a way station. It was their own employees in Brecksville. These were not independent contractors.
Well, what did they do in Brecksville?
They sat, the testimony of hearing was they sat in the warehouse until someone called and said, someone's bought these, send them out.
And when they got the phone call, did they then ship the product to the purchaser?
That was what the testimony is, yes.
Well, do you disagree with that?
That it was one
no.
part
of... He hangs up the phone, says, Bill, put 10 bundles on the truck to Oklahoma. We have a sale. Was it shipped from Brecksville?
It was shipped from Brecksville as part of one transaction.
So we agree that then the statute says shipped from, and it was actually shipped from Brecksville.
It was shipped from Brecksville as part of one continuing transaction, yes.
But I'm having a problem with the way that this statute is being interpreted, because there are other words that have to be ignored in order to support your position, and those words which would have to be ignored also would be that all sales of tangible property which are shipped from a place within such municipal corporation, and these are the words that are important to me, to purchasers outside. Now, your argument is that they're really shipped from Cleveland and they're just sent to this way station, but they're not being shipped from Cleveland to purchasers outside the municipality. It is only when they're in Brecksville that they're shipped to purchasers outside. So how do we get around those words? Yes, how do
well,
we get around
I that? Think what the statute means is if they weren't, if the sales activity did not occur in Cleveland, and if they weren't shipped to anyone in Cleveland, then Cleveland surely would have no right to tax those, and in those sales we don't. And I believe that that's what the statute intends to get at in that clause when they talk about shipped purchasers outside the jurisdiction.
Is there some reason that the taxpayer would rather pay the tax to Brecksville than Cleveland?
Yes, the tax is 1% in Brecksville and it's 2% in Cleveland. There is a reason.
Counsel, what if the facility received product from plants around the country, the warehouse?
If they were not, if the sales activity were in Cleveland.
And the sales activity were all in Cleveland. The sales force is in Cleveland. The company headquarters is in Cleveland. The manufacturing facilities are scattered throughout the country and the warehouse is in Brecksville.
Your Honor, if the orders were accepted in Cleveland, I believe that Cleveland would take the position that these are Cleveland sales. Court of Appeals.
Well, would the company, when it made its decision to build the warehouse in Brecksville, understand that to be the plain reading of the law?
I'm not aware of that. There's nothing in the record about what the taxpayer understood at the time they built the warehouse.
Lots of manufacturing concerns build warehouses at specific places, and I assume tax consequences are one of the things that they're looking at when they do that.
The only evidence we have is when Mr. Lewis, an employee of the taxpayer called Rita, who handles tax for Brecksville, that he was told
it was not
taxable there.
I'm not asking you about this taxpayer. What you're asking us to do is going to have implications for thousands of taxpayers who have warehouse facilities in this state.
Well, I don't see the issue as being taxation in two places. I don't believe a sale occurred in Brecksville. Going out to, you know, in a warehouse with a tow motor, picking up package with, you know, the tow motor carrying it to a truck, that's not a sale. And 718.02 only speaks to sales. I don't see how Brecksville can pick up this income, and under the Court of Appeals' well-reasoned decision, it would not be the sale.
Well, let me put my business question to you another way. Say a corporation looks around and says, we think the way the statute reads, the tax applies where the goods are shipped from, that is the warehouse. We're going to build a warehouse in an unincorporated area in which there is no tax. They build that warehouse at that location for that specific reason. Would that have been a fair reading and understanding of the law on their part, or you think that's...
It has never been the city of Cleveland's reading or understanding of the law. We believe there's only one place a sale can occur, and that absolutely no sales activity occurred in Brecksville. The sale is one continuous transaction.
Council, in the statute, interestingly, each of those three subparts starts with the sale table, as you pointed out. So what distinguishes among the three is the language that follows after the sale of personal property.
Right, Your Honor. Exactly.
So now we're talking about we aren't focusing so much on sale, but sale as defined or limited by, i.e. the third one, the ship from,
right,
or sale promoted from. So they're all sales, but...
But Brecksville, there would be no sales activity there. What this might be doing in Brecksville's factors of apportionment in the numerator for sales done in Brecksville, I don't see, because there weren't any sales in Brecksville. There was someone walking out and putting a package on a truck. And this is not what we understand sales to be.
But the statute also goes on to, in each subpart, to distinguish about the promotional activity that goes with it and where that has to happen.
Yes, Your Honor, and the reason for that is because this was taken from statutes that apply between states. And if there were sales activity in the jurisdiction that were trying to tax it, then they would be taxed in that state. For instance, if it were Ohio and New York, if there were sales activity and solicitation and acceptance of orders in New York, then that taxpayer would be heavily taxed in New York because he'd be doing business. But if you look at the facts here, if you look at what happened in the Brecksville warehouse, that is not really doing business. That would not subject the taxpayer to a large amount of tax. And that was what the solicitation part of the statute is getting at, that Cleveland may be circumscribed if, in fact, there were sales activity and solicitation and orders in Brecksville that would amount to two jurisdictions really coming after the same money.
So I think you're saying that you cannot have a warehouse itself would never qualify as a site for this kind of tax. It has to be a warehouse combined with the sales force sitting there.
It's the view of the city, the unanimous view of the Board of Review, the view of the Court of the Common Pleas, and the view of the Court of Appeals. And this being a 2506 appeal, the taxpayer has the burden of showing that decision was unreasonable, illegal, unsupported by the evidence.
Well, Judge Narrow didn't agree with that position, did it? Judge Narrow, Court of Appeals, wasn't it 2-1?
Yes, that's correct.
I thought you said that.
There wasn't
the appeals.
And the Court of Appeals did hold that.
But there was someone who disagreed.
That's true. That's correct, Your Honor. I'd also like to point out that in the taxpayer's reply brief, he mentions that the cases cited by the city, such as International Harvester, involved interstate commerce, and said that perhaps maybe they weren't applicable. But if you could have taxation from two different states and have it not mathematically perfect, and have it just a rough approximation with the strict scrutiny of the Commerce Clause, that when you're speaking intrastate between two cities and there's no Commerce Clause, that is an even looser standard, and surely two cities should be able to tax without mathematical precision either. Because it would be a looser standard than if interstate commerce were involved. Your Honors, I'd like to conclude by saying that everything happened in Cleveland that we understand to be a sale. The testimony is that all orders were there, all acceptances were there. The explicit testimony was no order was valid until accepted in Cleveland, that all that happened was one of four employees at the Brecksville warehouse would go out and send a package out for shipping. Court of Appeals and the Board of Review, and they're both of them wrote lengthy opinions, both of them wrote opinions, and stated that they did not believe that you could lop off a simple mailing of a package as being a sale. And they looked at the entire transaction in view of the reality of what happens in sales activities. And for that reason, all the jurisdictions below correctly found that these were taxes of Cleveland, and the city asked that this court affirm the lower courts below. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rossman. Mr. Day, you've saved almost 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal.
I have several points I'd like to make in rebuttal. First, I think it's important to recognize that the taxpayer here isn't seeking any immunity tax. They're not trying to avoid paying any tax in any city. It's just this over map question. It's the other size of the tax being paid to Cleveland for the simple reason that that's where they have all their property, for the most part, plant, real estate, machinery, equipment. It's where they have most all the employees that are on payroll. Also, in Brecksville, the tax is paid because there's property there. There are some employees there. It's just these sales that overlap that we're trying to straighten out. We don't think that under this statute you should get hit twice with the same sales, because that was the purpose of the statute to be done.
What's your response then to the council for the city of Cleveland suggests that a warehouse doesn't meet the criteria of a sales operation?
Yeah, well, if you close your eyes to the statute, you can come up with an argument that sales activity, where the orders are received and so forth, should be the focus. The trouble with that is that the statute doesn't have anything to do with sales activity. The statute says that sales of this kind will be attributed to the jurisdiction from which they are shipped, whose goods are shipped to the customers, period. I don't care where the sales activity occurred. If sales activity was to be the hallmark of the standard by which the sales would be attributed to municipality, the legislature would have said that. It would have been a terrible choice of language, because taxation for the property, you have to figure out how to comply. You can't just look at every sale and figure out where the sale occurred, but you surely can look at sales and determine where was a point of shipment. That's a very good bright line test. And that's why it was chosen with the legislature. It's very important to recognize that. As a second matter, if the city of Cleveland is correct in its instruction and interpretation of the statute, what about the other warehouses at L.J. Minor? Let's assume they have one in Toledo, one in Cincinnati, just as the one in Rexville, one in Chicago. And it's all handled the same way. It's a good to manufacture the plant and send out to those warehouses for home distribution to customers. That's the way things work in the commercial world. Under Cleveland view, because the orders are all accepted back at the plant, receive their payment, they're true. Well, the sales from all those other warehouses would have to be considered as Cleveland sales too, because there's no differential between those sales and the ones from the Rexville warehouse.
What about the contrary argument that these items were not shipped from Cleveland and therefore they simply don't fit under the statutory definition? Is there any way that you can refute the argument that they were shipped from Cleveland in some way?
Well, the statute doesn't say shipped from the municipality. The statute says shipped to customers from the municipality. Therein is a distinction. Again, important. When the goods are transferred from the Cleveland plant to the Rexville warehouse, they are unsold. These are generic goods, not custom manufactured. So they rest at the Rexville warehouse until orders are received, and then they're shipped. That's the answer, I think, Your Honor, the question.
like so many of these cases, I see just working in many of these tax cases, you look like you're dealing with a few goods between these parties shipped from two places, but the ramifications could be far-reaching in this. Supposing General Motors sends the cars to a lot in Toledo, or a dealer in Toledo, that's clearly a sale for getting the floor plan business. And then if they're shipped out of the, sold by the Toledo dealer, General Motors or Detroit could say they were all made in Detroit, therefore, Toledo, you don't get any of the tax on the sale, it all is in Detroit. Isn't that what we're dealing with here?
That's exactly what we're dealing with here, and the need for bright-line tax is obvious. That's why the legislature established the bright-line tax. Just one point to conclude. Council has dwelled on this Rexville situation, this district, as sort of a weigh station. Nothing happens there, really. But let me point out that a fairly important part of the sale transaction is the delivery of the goods to a carrier to be shipped to a customer. At that point, physical possession is transferred, legal ownership is transferred, right to control is transferred, risk of loss is transferred. That was a very deadlock condition of the sale, and Rexville incurred a lot of social costs.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.